Hi, my name is Michelle Axelson. I'm 46 years old. Today is April 3rd, 2024. I'm sitting in Women Crafts in Provincetown, Massachusetts with my friend Vicki.
And my name is Vicki Barstow. I'm 68 years old. It is April 3rd, 2024. And I'm delighted to be sitting in Women Crafts to talk with Michelle about lesbian visibility.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, Vicki. Before we get started, because this is audio and we're talking about visibility, can you tell everybody what you're wearing?
Yes, I chose my t-shirt this morning. It is from GLSEN, Gay and Lesbian School Teachers Network, and it was my second wave of gay liberation t-shirt is what I decided, because I had been teaching for about 15 years and had been deep in the closet after being able to be out earlier. This was my first visible t-shirt when I was a teacher, and on the back it says coming out soon at a school near you.
Very cool. All right, well, we can get more into that as we go. I just wanted to mark the moment of who I'm looking at. I'm taking in a visual lesbian. Like I've been asking everybody, Vicki, can you remember growing up what your reference point was for who was a lesbian, what was a lesbian, what were there celebrities? Were there people in your life? How did lesbian become a concept in your mind?
So I don't remember thinking about lesbians till maybe even after high school, which seems impossible. So then I tried to go back, and I realized I had worked for a hotline either junior or senior year, and there had been a group of gay people, I believe they were called the homosexual people, were coming in to talk to us about life as a homosexual, so we would know that homosexuals were absolutely fine, yeah. And we would be able to counsel children on the phone, which that's a whole crazy scenario we won't go into. And then, interestingly, my dad had been working at the Provincetown Theater and had been enjoying many relationships with many people at this point in his life. It was a great coming out for him. And he also had a girlfriend. I guess he would identify, they would probably both identify as pansexual now. So the girlfriend lived with us at his house. We were there on the weekends because our parents were divorced, and she was like a big sister kind of person to us. But she was the one who felt us out on how would you feel if your father were to come out as a gay man, because Daddy meanwhile wanted to go to all of the churches in Wellesley, the town we grew up in, and see if they would accept gay people, because he was on the founding board of directors for the Metropolitan Community Church, and the question was, do we need a gay church, or can we get the other churches to accept their gay parishioners?
Right.
And he was afraid that we would, you know, that friends of ours would find out that he was gay, and of course he wanted us to know first. And my sister and I were just adamant, like, of course, what? We were very upset at the idea that we would go against our dad because somebody would be upset about that.
And how old were you then?
So I was like 16 or 17. Okay. We were junior or senior year. We had been in Provincetown, which we revered as a place where hippies and free love, and we wanted to be hippies when we grew up. I mean, that was from tweenhood.
Yep.
So I was trying to think, why did it not trouble me that my father was coming out?
Uh-huh.
And I realized that because both of my parents had gay backgrounds, although the culture was putting out homophobic stuff that I could absorb and did absorb, inside my house, that was never happening.
Right.
And we were given the choice to leave organized religion, which was Episcopal, which I never heard any bad gay stuff in church. Jesus loved lambs and little children. That was kind of what I took away about Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seemed easy that, of course, gay people would be okay, just like all groups of people would be okay.
Right.
But then I realized I had been raised by Democrats who, we didn't have a TV until I was 6 years old, but I can remember getting to stay up late, and we would get to watch Dr. Martin Luther King and President Kennedy, and
wow.
those were our role models, and we wanted everything to be fair and equal in the whole wide world, and that was just kind of what it was like in our household. And I don't know what I did with all the stuff I got from outside of the household.
All right.
But it wasn't able to burrow deep.
And and without necessarily knowing it, there were adults in your life who were queer in yes. some way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then
and your father and then was in the arts it. And you were
yeah, exposed. So he was in the theater. So we were raised on a college campus in the theater department. So I'm sure that there were gay people all around me, and they were just people.
Right.
And then, that made me think of something else. Oh, then I come down to Provincetown for the summer after high school, and my sister's working in a leather shop, and she says, oh, Suzanne would love to go out with you. And it was like the dawn rising over Marblehead. What? A woman would like to go out with me? She's very cute. She's a lovely person. I would like to go out with her. And it was like a door opened that I had not even conceptualized. So here I know my dad's gay. I know gay people exist. It had not occurred to me that I could access this beautiful world.
Right.
And then that was just like, wow, why have I been limiting myself? Then I was afraid I couldn't be a dyke because I had not had angst. So, oh no, I can't be a real lesbian. I didn't have angst in high school. And then, I got into a little bit of dyke drama. So I'm like, okay, there's enough angst in my life now, enough dyke drama in my life. I can actually be a real lesbian and identify it. And I just embraced the identity. It was so exciting. I was in, first it was scary. Oh, yeah, because I went back to UNH.
Yeah.
And, this was this whole heterosexual place that I had been for a year of college. And now I'm returning with an awakened consciousness about lesbianism, feminism. I mean, like, everything was just bursting. So how was I going to tell people about it? And I managed to just... I hadn't yet developed my philosophy that I'm going to let people know that they like a dyke. But perhaps this was how I developed this philosophy, because gradually coming out to one or two girlfriends at UNH who then would tell the other ones and then would talk about it. And we were talkers, you know, we were like, we loved processing emotional stuff. So, and we were taking psychology classes together. So I managed to make it work with this heterosexual group of friends who were willing to be accepting. And then didn't I bring a girlfriend to campus on the weekends the next year? I started dating. I went to the Metropolitan Community Church that Daddy had founded to support him.
Yeah.
And, there was this minister that was just delightfully androgynous, was the word we used back then. And I started going every Sunday night to accompany Dad. And we would go out dancing at the Citadel afterwards in Boston. So that was that. Then she and I fell in love, and my friends accepted her at school, but she was a few years older, and she actually, her parents were Catholic and weren't wild about her being gay. So she moved into my childhood bedroom at my dad's house at Wellesley College, and they were living as roommates while I was off at college.
Wow.
Housemates.
Yeah.
And then I transferred to Wellesley so I could be with her, and that was the second 2 years of college were... as like a married lesbian, and then she dumped me right before graduation.
Oh, God. Well, going back to when your sister Robin let you know that Suzanne wanted to go on a date with you, somebody seeing you or acknowledging that they saw queerness in you opened your eyes to your own?
I think so, because I had liked boys. Mm-hmm. I had deep friendships with women, girls, sleepovers all the time, and much hugging and passionate crying. And again, the processing of emotions was an important part of our lives. But I never identified that as, I never identified it. Yeah. And then it was like all of a sudden, wow. And Suzanne and I went out a couple of times and then turned out she was bisexual and her boyfriend moved back to town. That was interesting. But then... the door had been opened, and I just started dating some women and really liking dating women.
It's interesting thinking about the visibility, because I'm asking people about who did you see, because I think we're sitting at Women Crafts right now, and I look at leaders and images of powerful, empowered women, and I think having that representation helps us. And so I'm asking questions about who you saw because if you can see it, you can be it, or you can identify yourself. But there's another part of it of who sees us or what gets picked up. And so, again, because we're on an audio format, and the theme of Lesbian Visibility this year is united, not uniform.
And which I love.
And I would say you and I have had these conversations. You wouldn't necessarily have been a classically pegged, she's a dyke, she's a dyke.
One of the very first political buttons that I bought in my second wave. Uh-huh. Because when I was in grad school and I had short hair and I was always wearing lesbian t-shirts, it was not hard to pick me out as okay. a dyke. But you wouldn't have, you would have presumed I was heterosexual had I not presented myself so clearly that way, because right. that was the community that I was loving and embracing and yes. celebrating being a member of. In fact, when my parents said to me, honey, we've seen you have nice relationships with boys and it's fine with us if you're gay, but wouldn't your life be easier if wow. you weren't? Because they had had very negative experiences, obviously, in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I just looked at them and said, it's the 70s, Mom and Dad. It's fine. There's no more gay discrimination from the Stonewall. I mean, like, we're all over the place. We're marching on the streets. And I wore marching in gay pride parades mm-hmm. and Women Unite Take Back the Night. Like, I yeah. was just able to immerse myself. So it didn't occur to me at all that this would have negative ramifications until I got hired as a school teacher. And I did know the whole time that I so here I am a grad student, but I'm also volunteering in elementary schools. I did not. You would presume I was heterosexual when I walked in the doors of that heterosexual sure. of that elementary school, and I allowed you to do that. I led you in that direction because I did not want to take any chances on not being able to follow my passion for teaching.
Right. So you that, and I share a thread of our own visibility. When we've been the most visible, it has been choices we've made, maybe yes. in signaling, in both of us liked slogan t-shirts and things like that. But more than other people I've asked about, like, well, what did you do to let other lesbians know you were a lesbian? You let the whole world know. And part of that is, your activism.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
But it becomes part of your identity.
And it does, and that's what I wanted to talk to people about. And my family, the extended family, then Dad had already come out, so mm-hmm. We have a small family, but they were very intellectual in their approach, and I think I was pretty intellectual in my approach too, because I got great psych classes at Wellesley. One of them was Growing Up Female. The psychological implications of growing up female in the 70s was like the name of the course. Women's studies didn't exist yes. as departments yet,
sure.
but I feel like I got to be with some of the professors who were creating the women's studies yeah. curriculum yeah. and finding it. So that was really exciting. I just lost my train of thought.
The identity of activism and...
Oh, yes, and how I was sharing myself with yeah. other people. And then getting hired as a teacher in a public school system mm-hmm. and, like, immediately shutting down all of that stuff. I became very frightened yeah. that I could lose this that I had finally achieved. I'd gotten my master's degree. Now I'm hired. I have a real job. Yep. And
did anybody tell you that, or you just knew it?
I knew it.
You knew it.
It was obvious in the society.
Yeah.
Yep. It was very obvious in the society that wouldn't be safe. I even had a moment when I was doing student teaching and I was volunteering with a child and working very closely with her, helping her with home skills and everything. And her mom set up an appointment to talk to me. And I was so scared. She wasn't going to let me work with Linny anymore. And especially, I mean, like, I was teaching her daily living skills. Yeah. And, wow, I did not. That was awful. It was awful to think that would happen. And then she just wanted to, she said, I want you to clean the ashtrays when you leave after you've been babysitting. And I was like, oh, no problem. Which I never would have, you know, I mean, yeah. I probably left at one time.
Yeah.
But the fear that evoked,
yeah.
that set me up for the public school thing. So then it wasn't until it was probably 9 years into public school teaching, because I went back and tried to figure these dates out.
Yeah.
Before I met my wife, who I met as a school teacher, I went to a Mass Teachers Association conference. I'd been getting involved with the MTA, and I was invited to be the non-minority member of the Minority Affairs Committee, because okay. Minority Affairs was Black,
yep,
and Latino and Cape Verdean and Puerto Rican. Yep. So I love working with this great group of women from Randolph, and that was very exciting. And somehow our group, Minority Affairs, became aware that there were gays and lesbians who were treated like minorities in our culture. And maybe we should be looking at that as a teachers' association.
Wow.
And the first time I went to a workshop on homophobia, I was like, what? What? Oh my goodness, we have this thing to fight. We can get rid of this in education. We need to make sure that teachers are safe. We need to make sure that kids are safe. So that just was like, oh boy, now you can be an activist in public schools. But you have to do it very carefully and very quietly, and you have to do it step by step, and you must be the perfect ideal teacher in order to be able to go out on this branch and take these chances. And we had wonderful support from, let's see, so that started with the MTA. Oh, and it was so funny. We put together a workshop, and then somebody in the group said, well, you know, we really need to run this by some gays and lesbians because we're making a gay lesbian workshop. And there was this, Kevin was so queeny. He and I were aware of each other just by gaydar, even though I was allowing people to presume.
Yeah.
He and I both quietly raised our hands and said, we approve. And that was how we came out to that Minority Affairs group. So that opened up a whole bunch of then gay stuff happening through the MTA. And then I was able to connect through Framingham Public Schools, because there were some wonderful social workers and gym teachers that started a safe schools movement in our town.
Yeah.
And I don't know who was governor then, but there was a liaison from Massachusetts state government to us. So we got to work with Kim Westheimer, I want to shout out, and Jeff Parati, who also, the work he did with trans kids after he helped us, you know, get we were always LGBTQ, I think, plus, and Two-Spirit came along later for language. But they helped us do a series of workshops in the Framingham Public Schools in the late 90s, where every single teacher had to address it. And there was a lot of visibility stuff in those first workshops.
Wow.
The first question, how do you make who you are visible?
Yep.
And all the married people have their wedding rings, they have their wife and their kids on the desk.
Yep.
I don't have anything on my body at all that identifies that I'm a lesbian when I'm in the school.
Yeah. Talking to you, I have tears in my eyes, just a lot of it, and there's different reasons there. As we're talking, I just want to acknowledge anybody who's listening, Vicky's talking about the school system she worked in, and that was a school system I attended.
Exactly.
And so some of Vicky's big markers here are while I was in school and while I was leaving school, and I'll take a moment of personal privilege that when I was in school, and as an adult, I've said to women who are older than me that existed within the school system and within this town, I wish I saw you.
I know.
I wish I knew. I wish I knew someone. I'm aware now of classmates who were gay, and the few that were kind of out, one in theater, a few female athletes, it didn't go well for them.
Right.
And that also wasn't my community, so it didn't help me necessarily see myself.
And you had no idea that there were some queer teachers in the background attempting to change that, because that wasn't happening. You graduated in 95,
right.
And I think we did our big rounds of workshops in like 97, 98.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and having questions about certain teachers, and the one teacher I was very certain of, you and your wife have assured me that she was straight. So for all I knew, the one visible lesbian I thought I knew isn't. But but to think about, and I feel like crying a little bit for you in terms of the emotional baggage, not baggage, the emotional labor. That's what I want to say, labor. So what you're signaling, what you're not signaling with students, with faculty, with administration, with parents, how you're dressing, what you're thinking, having a meeting with a parent could out you, could put you in danger, could put you at risk. And the other teachers easily had a picture of their husband and their kids and wore what they wore and shared about their kids in class. So in addition to not being visible, there were probably assumptions made. I, as a student, probably made assumptions about the female teachers I had who I believed were single.
Yeah.
Are they spinsters? I remember a few we would always talk about, like, well, is she a nun? Like, it was not a Catholic school. I remember, like, certainty about two specific teachers that everybody's like, I think they're nuns.
Well, my big thing was being Ms.
Yeah.
So that I could identify as an out-proud feminist.
Yeah. Right.
And there was always a, gosh, I can remember having to teach a lesson on Mrs. What did it mean?
Yeah. Right. And that there's some groundwork to be done. You can be a woman-loving woman within the women's movement. And that's different than being a lesbian.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's
interesting.
True. And then the way you, so as I'm going to these workshops, I came to Women Crafts and I bought, Labrys earrings, and that was going to be my big brave thing. And I was going to tell the children that, oh yes, the Amazons were hunter gatherers, mm-hmm. and so they had these weapons. Because I was also known as a real peace freak, yeah. And nobody noticed that
nobody
I was wearing lesbian earrings. So then I put a picture of my wife, my girlfriend at the time, partner. She's holding a brand new puppy that we had gotten,
yeah.
And she's got a cap on. You know, like you really couldn't tell that this was the teacher from another part of town if you looked at the picture. But I had her on my desk. That was like a test case. I mean, it was laborious because it was step by step,
yeah.
And then you're implicitly out, of course, and then you read about the steps that you're going to take to make this happen. So I'm implicitly out to people, then I'm having one-on-one conversations and getting lots of support from my friends, because my theory that I developed is really true.
Mm-hmm.
You once you know you like a dyke, it's really hard to be prejudiced against a whole group of people. And it's like, oh yeah, of course, why wouldn't you want to be out? So the support I got from the other elementary school teachers in my building was phenomenal.
Absolutely.
As it was from the principal, as it was from, I dealt with the assistant superintendent because he had been my principal before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew everything, because I decided to come out in the year 2000. Here's the huge visibility piece. So I'm going to all these workshops. Bob Parlin, I want to shout out another hero, was a teacher in Newton North, and he came out as a high school teacher in the 90s. And it was a big deal, but he kept his job.
Mm-hmm.
And he was presenting with Kevin Jennings at a workshop, and I went up and spoke to them after. I was sobbing when he told his story. I can remember just sitting there sobbing as he told the coming out story. The beauty of him sharing that part of himself with the kids, the bravery of doing it, the possibility that, oh my gosh, you've got a role model right here in front of you, Vic. And I went up to him and I said, so what can we do? I mean, like, marching orders. I want something I can do tomorrow. And he said, well, you know, the more they see out gay grownups, the better off they're going to be. And that's when I decided, okay, I definitely have to do this. And then I started going through all of the steps that I wanted to go through to make sure that it would work out. And it was a smashing success. So it was absolutely wonderful.
At that point, could you have been legally fired?
I do not think I could have been legally fired.
Okay.
I think I got protections like around 95 or 96. They would have had to cook up something else, and it's wicked hard to fire teachers anyway.
Okay.
Once you've been around that long.
Okay.
But you felt like
you had to tell your administration.
I wanted to, just like every time I work with a student, I want to set them up for success. I wanted to set myself up for success with this. And I knew, I had this wonderful class. I loved all my classes, most of my classes, with great feminist parents.
Yep.
You know, and they're in all the time for writing workshops. So when you're an elementary school teacher, the parents really know you. At least it was very common practice in my elementary school that they were in and out of the classroom. And, in fact, after I came out, I was a fifth grade teacher, some fourth grade parents who were the head of the PTO came to me and said, we want you to know that we're behind you 100%. If you get any grief from the parent community, come to us and we will address it. So the beauty of the response that I've been so frightened sure. of taking this action, but so committed to taking the action. And then, oh, phew, I got thank you letters from the parents the yeah. next day. It was really...
Well, tell the story of how you did it. Okay, what you did was really remarkable.
So, I knew I was going to do it. It was the spring of the year. I have this receptive class that's going to be good. I wrote a letter to the parents, putting it in terms of the four core values of the Framingham Public Schools, trust, and three other great values. Don't come to mind right this second. But that I was matching the values by being open with them, that it did not feel good to me to be keeping a secret from them, that allowing them to presume that I was heterosexual was in fact breaking a trust.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to break that trust. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that was necessary anymore in our society, and I thought it would actually be, you know, fine for their students. Oh, and I had this great paragraph, and your students know about all of this because they're horrified at slavery. And they identify with the Puritans and the abolitionists. And, I went through a whole bunch of things much more articulately than I'm doing right now. But that was the letter for the kids to take home after the open circle. I wanted to tell the kids first because my primary relationship is with them. So I did an open circle, which is this wonderful elementary school phenomenon where you talk about feelings.
Yep.
We had many lessons on discrimination and sharing and not bullying. So I was able to tie this into that, and that I had something to tell them that I hoped... that was a paradox, which is not a dinosaur. No, it means it's a big deal for me, but I don't want it to be a big deal for you. And then I said, you know, the person that I talk about, she's my partner. I'm a lesbian, and we're a lesbian family. It's just the two of us, but that's my family. And, of course, the dogs, which they knew many stories about. Yeah. And then I gave them the letter. They were bored to tears reading the letter.
Yeah.
they wanted to talk. Maybe not bored to tears, but that gave them time to process a little bit without having to react. Mm-hmm. And then the conversation that ensued was just so heartwarming. You're the same Miss Barstow you were 10 minutes ago. Okay. I'm behind you 100%. I mean, like, I couldn't believe it. Another girl, my mom had a gay boss back when we lived in Texas, so I've known lesbians are nice for ages. From the mouth of a fifth grader. And it was fine, and we did math and social studies and went on with our day, and like I said, there was a positive parent response. The whole school was thrilled for me. I mean, like, the faculty was really, really happy. And many years later, when my wife and I got married, they had parties for us at both of our schools. She was a VEEP over at Barbary, and they had a big breakfast for us, and then my school had a big breakfast for us. So that was visibility. Wow, here we are, out lesbian teachers, and the world is still rotating on its axis.
Go figure. Yeah.
And there are kids who have written to me or I've bumped into in public who have later said what a difference that had made to them.
Of course.
I figured it did, but it's also nice to know that for sure.
Once you did that with that classroom and that class, the next class that comes in, and the next after that, and the next after that, do you come out?
You don't have to do the whole big deal again.
Yep.
So the second year, and I got this from that fourth grade parent. Mm-hmm. She said she was driving. She loved listening to the kids, you know, in the back seat when she's driving them. So she called me to say, Melanie was really mad that she was absent yesterday because you told the kids that you were gay and she missed it. But she realized that it wasn't the big deal that you had done the year before.
Yeah.
And it was funny. I think I had to come out again 5 years later because it was so boring that people forgot.
Right.
And there was a moment where I just said something that indicated I was gay, and I saw shock on the children's faces.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I didn't mean to surprise. Like, I took a stop moment to say, you know, anybody have any clues? I've been out for a long time now. Yeah. I didn't know that it had not trickled down.
Right. Yeah.
Which was great that it was so boring.
Of course, it hadn't trickled down because it didn't necessarily matter. Wow.
And then I would see kids when I volunteered for the Gay Straight Alliance at the high school who had been in the elementary school. And that was always a really cool moment.
I mean, I just know, like, as I'm sitting here, I know how much I wanted it And
I'm so sorry I didn't do it before.
Well, and I don't know that I would have known, you know, in our, where we overlapped in schools, I don't know that I would have known. Right. But I can't imagine for kids, you'll never know how that impacted, that it impacted. And it's like really hitting me hard that this is 2000.
This happened in 24 years ago.
But that,
and look
not...
what's going on in the world right now. Yeah. And that's infuriating. Yeah. And that's why we need to be keeping on being so, so visible and helping our children who are being attacked in this country.
And the teachers.
And the teachers.
Teachers in Florida being told they can't talk about themselves, that they can't be who they are, that they can't give any positive affirmation to anybody's life experience, that they can't model safe, sane, healthy adults.
And just read beautiful children's books that have diverse characters in
right.
them. And I need to shout out Women Crafts, because mm-hmm. during those early years of safe schools, mm-hmm. this was where I would find my books to read to elementary school children.
That's great.
So that was,
and
that
thankfully
was really
there's
helpful.
So many more now than there were then.
Oh my gosh, now I can't keep up with them, which is a good problem to have.
There's so many. This conversation has woven so many things without needing my questions to be explicit, and some of what you've shared indicates this, but I guess separate from teaching, I wonder, have you ever been afraid because of your visibility, have you ever been physically afraid? Have you ever been somewhere else outside of your comfort zone and thought, I'm not safe walking, holding my wife's hand, or I shouldn't.
We definitely make decisions.
Yeah.
We were traveling to the national parks, and so we did not know what the energy was mm-hmm. around us, and we were traveling with two other lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
So we made a conscious decision and talked about that we weren't going to be mm-hmm. obvious,
yeah.
and it is very easy to assume that I'm heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Probably the other three women were, you know, we weren't fooling anybody. But we weren't holding hands.
Yeah.
So we just had decided that we weren't going to do that. And that's a tough decision to make. And there's some places where I want to hold the hands, mm-hmm. even though I'm a little nervous. And there's some places where I'm out of state. I'm not taking any chances. I don't know what's going to happen here. Just out of fear.
Yeah.
And once it happened to me when I was at a club in Boston, like in my 20s, it was not a place that I was used to going, but there was a band playing. And I think I only remember because a girl from my elementary school was the drummer, and I thought that it was a gay band, and I was very surprised. And this guy was staring at me really nasty,
yeah.
and I tried to stare him back down, and
yeah.
it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, ugh, I kind of short-circuited. And I remember being very physically frightened
yeah.
Until I got into my car.
Wow.
But that's really the only time. So
wow.
I've been... You know, I'm very, very lucky. And
yeah.
and much of my adult life, I've been hanging around Provincetown, which
right.
has always felt so safe.
Yeah.
And we do love, I love, for some reason, I just love kissing her cheek in the supermarket. I think just because I can.
Yeah. I say that to people, friends of mine, or people I know that own stores, other places that, and I'm sure it happens in other places, stores in Provincetown. I think there's something about this shop being women-centric, and that there is a legacy of selling like commitment bands and wedding bands and stuff like that, that I think that I have seen couples kiss more than most shop owners have. I think that in this space, touching and kissing and whatever happens at,
yes.
at a greater frequency because it can.
Yes, because it can.
Which is nice. And so also your visibility over time. So you had experiences being publicly out and activism and all of that, and then your teaching career having to button
to live
up.
Two lives, right? The
and then your visibility changes by virtue of your relationship,
and then it's so lovely to just be Miss Barstow, the gay teacher.
Yeah.
It was so relaxing. I lost 40 pounds.
Whoa.
I mean, I had joined Weight Watchers
yeah.
group that we were doing at school, but
yeah.
I'm sure it had something to do with losing the weight of being in the closet.
Yeah.
It
wow.
was just so relaxing. And then once we got married, just all you have to do is say wife and you're out of the closet.
Right.
So that, for my heterosexual appearing self,
yeah.
made coming out very easy.
Yeah. And we've talked about this a little bit in the last few years, what do you think now, or can you say something more about your philosophy that worked for you in many ways of, I'll be good enough that they'll like me?
When I learned that assimilation was one of the forms of racism, I was like, wow, well, I guess that's the form that you embraced, girlfriend. And so I've been doing some examining of that. Yeah. And to give myself permission to not be an ideal human being, to take that pressure off, is a lovely thing to think about. I wouldn't say I've mastered it.
Well, I'm noticing that in the conversations I'm having, and even just yesterday I had a conversation with someone whose experience professionally is different. It's in the trades. But she believed her safety was tied to, and her longevity in the career was tied to, doing it better, doing it best, being good enough, so that you could be inscrutable. So then the discrimination is harder. And so I just think about, and not that we shouldn't all strive for greatness and all of these things, but again, the things that our straight counterparts might not know that we have had to do.
Right.
And this can be true for women in general. And this can be true for all the groups. We're talking specifically about lesbians. But particularly if you like a dyke, I'm thinking about, and I notice this too, that some stereotypes, me and my presentation versus Erin, my partner and her presentation, I think in addition to the fact that I could pass as straight, my body is physically softer than her body, and I'm perceived as softer. And which comes first?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I think it would be, people would be quicker to say, I am nice. And that's physical. And then am I because I'm treated that way, because I look this way, because of things I do?
Right, and then how much does all of that stuff turn around on someone?
Yeah, I mean, and as I'm unpacking with people this idea of there's no uniform, as somebody who is not quickly read in the greater world, I think in Provincetown people can identify clearly that I'm a lesbian, but if people aren't so exposed to differences, I think I've looked for a uniform more than women who just naturally wear one.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. No, I can identify with that perfectly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As we move forward, what hopes do you have for the next generation about what visibility could mean?
Well, my ideal world has everybody being able to be visible of everything that they are.
Yeah.
So that means that we need to get the vote out dramatically.
Yeah.
Keep progressive Democrats in office. Get rid of these people that are just haters. I don't know how we fight the capitalism that's fueling that, the dark money that's going into the Supreme Court. So I take faith in the persisters that I get to look at in the shop every day. And we just need to keep fighting for it, because the world should be, everybody gets to be themselves. We should respect, I might even say, the inherent worth and dignity of all people until they give us a damn good reason not to.
Yeah,
look at that. Which is how I'm trying to work with that concept.
Yeah, very nice.
In my mind. Very but nice. I have very idealistic hopes for the world that are not being played out right now in all places, but are being played out in some places.
Sure.
So, that, like the visibility of, we've got a gay governor.
Mm-hmm.
We have an openly lesbian governor. That's beautiful.
Right.
And trans people in the state legislatures and all. So the steps forward and steps back all happening at the same time, it feels like.
As we're closing up, is there anything that you were imagining we were going to talk about today that you didn't get to? That I didn't bring out?
The difficulty, is that the word that I want to use? No, I want to use a different word. Mm-hmm. I want to say the beautiful journey of 3 decades that I have taken with my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
That her, I can understand why it was so hard for her as a Catholic wife of a school administrator. That everybody's going to be judging her. Everybody's going to be judging her for having a lesbian daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant my partner's whole experience of being a lesbian is radically different than my whole experience. I was so blessed to have it be a celebration. I mean, I just feel so fortunate about that. And so I continued with my like a dyke. And, yeah. And she was real upset when Paula was identified as my partner in my dad's obituary in 2004. That was because before we just pretended it didn't happen. Vicky mm-hmm. was best friends with Paula. We bought houses together. The yep. children call me Auntie Vicky, and we're just best friends. And mm-hmm. we just allowed that to sit. And then I started to be more and more uncomfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And the nieces and nephews were allies of mine.
Sure.
So they were working on this also. Mm-hmm. And then finally, and Michelle got to hear the story because I was so excited mm-hmm. running in here when I had had a real positive experience with the mother-in-law, that we've decided secrets are not a good thing to have in families, and you can love your gay children. And this Catholic mom is able to hug my wife. She just did it last month mm-hmm. to say, I don't care that you're gay. I love you. And for that to have happened is worth every bit of scariness and Paula not wanting me to push her mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's worth every single bit of it.
Right. We'll talk about persistence. And it's connecting that to Paula and you and Paula's relationship was really important to your dad.
Oh, my gosh. And that you didn't deny that.
So I am honoring you in that moment of what a loss it would have been to not acknowledge who she was in the obituary.
That is so true.
Yeah, but looking at in-laws, like both, and so who takes precedent, and that there was a moment that you allowed the reality yes, of your family yes.
to overcome that, yeah. exactly. And Paula was so, I mean, their relationship was so, so, so special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things about StoryCorps, anybody who's listening to this now, as I said, we're sitting here in 2024, and why I took on this project is that I hope people, when they're interested in a time, a moment, a group, and they can look back to add our voices to the story, and you fill in a story for me, you fill in a story about my school district that was happening around me, you fill in a story for me about Provincetown, you fill in a story for me about, you know, we grew up in similar places and have similar worldviews. But your experience and your visibility, whether or not I saw it, I know impacts my life and I know improved my life in Metro West Boston,
wow.
you know, and down here. And I need people like you to tell me your story and champion, you know, what you went through and what you stuck with. And that I think we have a lot of similarities, but also that you heard somebody coming out and you said, what can I do tomorrow? And even though you wanted to do something tomorrow, you did something planful and thoughtful. And I think of you that way in your life. And for anybody that gets to listen to this right now, I just want to tell you that this woman has many more stories to tell. And one of the great things about StoryCorps is that we can do it again and we can do it more. And I'm hoping that over the course of Provincetown celebrating Lesbian Visibility Week, that I'm going to help empower people that I just pushed a button on my phone and we were able to do this and now it exists in the National Archives.
It's amazing.
It's really
in the
cool.
Library of Congress, right. We're crying out loud.
Right. A story worth hearing.
We are everywhere and yeah. we will be free.
Yeah.
That's one of the little chants.
Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank Women Crafts for existing, because a great deal of my journey was held up by Women Crafts. Women Crafts helped quite a bit along the way.
Thank you.
And still does.
And still does. Yay.
Come in and see us.
Glad we're still here. All right. Bye, everybody. Thank you.